My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hey kids, Jeff Hawkins here. Wanted to give a quick heads up. My audio mixer blew up on Wednesday, right before I did the Dynamite show. So I have changed audio settings and Zoom put on the noise gate a little bit for the new setting. So there might be a little bit of fading in and out throughout the show. There is at least at the end, but for the most part, from what I listen to, it's still good audio quality. I just don't need to be told that the audio is bad. But wanted to give you all a heads up. Now, shake them ropes.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Starting off, RIP to one of my favorite musicians, Dickie Betts of the Allman Brothers Band, passing away at age 80. I have seen the Allman Brothers Band 5 times in concert, 3 with Dickie, 2 in the more modern parlance, but Dickie, also the writer of my favorite Allman Brothers Band song, which is Blue Sky. It's an absolutely gorgeous song with a guitar duet in the middle. Chris, are you aware of the work of one Dickie Betts, sir?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So back in the day, when I was learning guitar, had a subscription to Guitar World magazine. And a number of different people did columns in Guitar World. Most of them were mid to less than mid. However, the two that always stuck out, Dickie Betts had a recurring column that was always good, but it was always these country licks that I didn't really understand, but I could tell that it was actually well-written and thoughtful, and he spent some time working on the column. And then the other column that was actually very useful to me when I was kind of advancing was the column from Richard Lloyd of Television. But okay. Dickie Betts was a staple in Guitar World magazine as a writer.
Yeah, his issues with the Allman Brothers Band were mostly due to his just heavy drinking for the most part, and he'd be in and out, sometime after 94, 95, after that tour, which was really the last good tour I think I saw them on. That actually gets me to a wrestling discussion, of all things, guitar playing, because I was thinking about this. I've been watching a lot of early 80s AWA on a compilation that was basically taped off of ESPN Classic. You can tell they were kind of remastered because Eric Bischoff does the intros and outros and whatnot. And I don't know if I'm off on this comparison, but I was thinking about this. I'm watching like Bockwinkel versus Hogan, and there's some Mad Dog Vachon in there, and there's some Jerry Blackwell. Jerry Blackwell, the most modern connection I can make that is he's like Otis if Otis didn't work out. I mean, he's like 5'8" and 350 pounds or something like that. But Hogan is awesome in this period. And the weird thing, I say awesome relatively, so to speak.
But no, when Hogan worked back in the day,
he could work.
He could work somewhat. Yeah, it wasn't bad.
And when
he was entertaining.
Yeah, and when Vince took over or took him away from Minnesota, he changed nothing except do less with Hogan, because he already had Eye of the Tiger as a theme song. He had the Hulk up. Hulkamania was already a term on television. The only thing they were really doing different was they were calling him the Incredible Hulk Hogan, which ran afoul, of course, of the Marvel copyright. But everything they were doing with Vern, Vince just basically took, and there's this story that, oh, you know, Vince took him and saw him as a star, blah, blah, blah. No, he just took him and used him as he was being used on that AWA television. And I'm watching, and it's like every, like, especially in the Adrian Adonis thing. And look, most of these matches, he's working with great workers, or he's in like Montreal for a Mad Dog Vachon match where that crowd is just rabid and just screaming. And I miss those types of heat filled crowds. But like when he's fighting an Adonis, or even even Jesse Ventura was actually a pretty good seller. It, you know, everything is methodical and on purpose, and you punch a guy in the face and he acts like he's been punched in the face. And I contrasted this with the match on Wednesday with Cesaro and Will Ospreay. And there was a sequence that I absolutely hated. Will Ospreay gives him like 3 soccer kicks in the face, and Cesaro no-sells it and just starts giving the European uppercuts to no damage. And to me, I think, and this is a theory of mine, my thing about wrestling is it's like watching a guitarist who was influenced by blues and stuff like Eric Clapton or anybody from that European, the England, you know, the British invasion stuff, Jimmy Page, Winwood, if you want to go that far, versus, say, Eddie Van Halen. Or a Steve Vai, Joe Satriani thing, who are doing a lot of quick stuff. And, you know, it's good. And it's, you know, oh, look, they're, look how quick they're going. Look how awesome, you know, he's doing that thing or whatever. But the guitar solos by them are a lot of notes in there versus like notes that kind of, you know, they're a little bit slower and a little bit more thoughtful and purposeful. But you remember those solos a lot more, even though you think of Eddie Van Halen as a very great guitar player.
The issues with Claudio's matches, though, precede him.
Yes, yes.
Right? Like, but, I mean, this was something he was doing back in WWE when he was on the verge of getting a push. He just has this sensibility of spamming these uppercuts far too much. I think it's on Claudio to some extent to be like, big European uppercut, sell like death. You need to actually, yes. I think, to a certain extent, call your sells.
Or get kicked in the face, sell like death, like you've been kicked in the face by Will Ospreay. I mean, that's...
I think some of this is on the wrestlers. I don't know how everybody calls a match. I'm not a genius at these sorts of things. But I think to some extent, if you want more of that in your match, as a wrestler, you not only call the move, but if it's a big sell, make sure you kind of specify the sell level. Like, start working the leg, start selling.
Like, to me, all the emotion is in the selling. I mean, it's been for me, watching wrestling.
Absolutely.
And that's why I get so bored by Strong Style and other things like that, because nobody sells as much, but... That sounds like old man yelling at clown.
No, the selling feeds the fire up. I was worried you were going to go full Rick Beato on this.
No.
Yeah,
that's why I like that Bayley match.
You didn't go fully to the Beato zone.
I mean, that's why I like that Bayley match so much at Mania, because it was really the one match where somebody got over by selling, and it was just beautiful to me. But anyways, let's get to the news. The injury bug hitting a lot of high-profile wrestlers. Rhea Ripley separated AC joint in her shoulder during that backstage brawl with Liv Morgan. Had nothing to do with the clocked in the head by the chair, which both awesome and scary. Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch in an interview announced that he had knee surgery on Tuesday. He had a torn meniscus that was suffered at Mania. He's had knee problems in the past. And then Matt Cardona tearing his pec on an indie show on April 13th, having repair, he'll be out for some time too. Cardona had just really, really gotten hot based on his stuff on the indies, and also that that collision show that I watched where he was the special opponent for Edge or Adam Copeland for the TNT title, that match was great. And it's a shame because I think he was really on the verge of almost being signed by AEW, and now he's going to be out for some time. Any comments on any of those, Chris?
Seth Rollins is an interesting one with the meniscus tear, just because meniscus is such a weird – they are a very weird part of the body, and it's not easy to repair or stabilize them. Like, if you are someone who has meniscus problems, you're going to keep having meniscus problems.
Yes.
And that's what I worry about for Seth.
Well, this is not the first meniscus tear on this meniscus, I believe, as well. This was
right.
This
Didn't was the one where one he told pulled us, out.
This is the one where he also, I believe, this is the same knee that he tore his ACL on and tore his meniscus at the same time. He and I had the same knee injury, as I recall, and I said at that time, knees are funny things. And he was wearing a. I remember this because he has a brace like mine. And he was wearing it under his tights at first. And then, you know, he was being very safe about it. And then eventually, I think he stopped wearing his brace because he had strengthened up his knee enough. But, yeah, I think he's going to have to change his style a little bit. He's going to have to become like latter-day Randy Orton and maybe a little bit more plotting in his offense in his late-stage career.
I think so. Christian-like sort of offense and pacing in the massive. Hey, that's – No, Christian
There's nothing
has,
wrong with that. Christian,
his, especially his big notes, match style.
He makes the notes count.
He makes the notes count. He has, you know, he'll do a little tope over the ropes, something like that. He's not, like, adverse to that still. And he's still doing it at nearly 50, which is something that Seth Rollins should take notes on.
He's over 50.
Yeah. Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he's 50. I think he's 50 on the dot, turning 51 this year, because he's my age.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And I'm old.
All right.
Rossi Ogawa announced the opening of his new promotion, Dream Star Fighting Marigold, shorthand Marigold, and there is a working agreement between the promotion and WWE, which, as you recall, when he got fired from Stardom, or you know who was very happy about that? One Tony Khan, because Tony Khan basically accused him of being a mole for WWE. I didn't watch a lot of the press conference. There was just one very interesting note. I think one of the wrestlers said that it was encouraging women 13 to 30 to come apply to train to be a wrestler in the old promotion. But
I mean, we are talking about a company with a name like Dreamscape.
Yes.
Marigold Flower. that it appeals to women of that entire age range, maybe even higher, possibly.
Oh, Joshi wrestling. I think the partnership with WWE is very interesting, though. That part of it, but Julia is going to be one of the focal points for now of Marigold as she acclimates to the NXT and to the States. But Rossi also had I won't say relationships, but that sounds like poor phrasing, and I don't mean it.
This guy's going to get arrested, isn't he?
I think so. With Kairi Sane and Io Shirai before they came over to WWE. Asuka doesn't think very much of Rossi, as I recall, but...
this guy's going to get arrested. That's how I see this thing going. Best of luck to Dreamscape Fight Marigold in all of its future endeavors.
Dream Star Fighting Marigold.
Okay.
Just call it Marigold. But you know what else? You know what their colors are?
Just call it Marigold. When it's got a name like Dream Fight Scape Marigold Go.
Super Karate Monkey Death Car.
Yeah, come on now.
Their colors and a lot of their branding and their sweatsuits certainly are a throwback to the NXT black and gold, though, Chris.
Well, that's because marigolds are like that. Like, and all the performers are little flowers that are fighting.
All right. We talked about this pre-show. Let's get into it on air. Nyla Rose was a subject of the Oklahoma State Athletic Commission issuing a warning to AEW. Quick primer, Oklahoma groups wrestling as a combat sport along with kickboxing and MMA and whatnot. And there's a ban on intergender matches in Oklahoma, according to the OSAC's rules. Quote, the commission will not approve sanctioning permits between human participants and non-humans. Means you can't fight a bear. Or between males and females.
I'm sorry. I would pay good money to watch a man wrestle a rock. And it's stupid that I can't do that. And, like, honestly.
Is this America?
Right. I'm sorry. Like, my grandfather did not go over and serve in the Battle of the Bulge so that I can't see a man wrestle a trash bag. Are you telling me that back in 2016, Jeffrey, in the great state of Texas, when you and I watched
Oklahoma.
Kota.
Oh, well, never mind.
No, in okay. 2016, Jeffrey.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
When we watched Kota Ibushi wrestle an inflatable blow up doll, that would be illegal in Oklahoma.
It would be illegal in Oklahoma.
That's called fascism.
My uncle, my grandfather didn't fight in a war. And
my buddies did not die face down in the muck. So that I can't watch a man wrestle.
Let me get my joke. We're not eaten by cannibals in Papua New Guinea. Like Joe Biden's uncle.
I thought this is America. All these people, they always say they like small government. And all of a sudden now I can't watch a man kick a box for money. Think about that, Jeff. What kind of sense does that make? I want to watch a man beat the shit out of a wooden box, and you're telling me in Oklahoma I can't do it.
Well, those crates are more dangerous than cardboard. Anyways, a male participant is a person of a heterogametic sex born with XY chromosomes. A female participant is a person born of the homogametic sex with double X chromosomes. At the OSAC's January 3rd meeting, the Nyla Rose match was brought up for discussion. According to the meeting's minutes, this is from OKC Fox. According to minutes from the meeting, Joe Miller, the administrator of OSAC, said they had no idea about the match until they were notified by a local wrestling organization. The local wrestling organization reached out to OSAC because they had previously held an intergender match. That organization later acknowledged what happened and told the OSAC they would, quote, refrain from doing it again in the future, in parentheses me, but they still said, hey, those guys got to do it. Mike Bauer, chairman of the commission, said that wrestling applications don't ask if someone has had gender reassignment surgery. Bauer explained that the OSAC boxing, kickboxing, and MMAX applications do ask that question. Bauer recommended they update wrestling applications to ask that question. According to the minutes from the meeting, the commission ended up voting to warn AEW, quote, not to do this again or there will be punitive action made against them, unquote. Miller said he had spoken with AEW about the match and explained it violated OSAC rules. Now, of course, the blowback from the warning got into bigger cultural issues. But to me, this is as I told Chris in our pre-show, this is both the best and worst of bureaucratic morass, because really the rule here should be don't regulate wrestling. I have not wanted regulation in wrestling since it ruined the main event of the pay-per-view of Great American Bash 1988, Flair versus Luger, where Luger bled in Maryland and the Maryland Athletic Commission stopped it on account of blood. I have never been for regulating professional wrestling. It is not a real sport. It is an entertainment thing with athleticism involved in it. That said, if Oklahoma is going to group these as combat sports, it is the job of the commission for the safety of the athletes, and I understand that rule as well, as archaic as it is. I just, to me, this is bigotry, and how dare we do this? The overwroughtness of that got me in some trouble because I played contrarian over on the figure four board with those geniuses over there. I don't know, Chris, you may have a different point of view for me. For me, the Occam's razor says, let's just not regulate wrestling. Even though this is one of those states, let me give this other explanation. You have to fill out an application and pay a fee to be both a promoter and a wrestler on a wrestling card. And the application includes getting a medical exam by a doctor signed off with any pre-existing medical conditions because they're very concerned about safety. Now, I'm taking that as a good faith. We are concerned about safety. And if you take that in good faith, then yes, they probably should have stepped in or something like that. But here's a couple other things. Number one, Bureaucracy also is really bad at updating forms, and they should have updated this wrestling form to indicate, yes, there's more than male and female. I get that, too. I sympathize with that argument quite a bit. I also think this is partially the fault of AEW, which has a legal team and should know the rules and regulations of professional wrestling in each state for those backward-ass states that still regulate professional wrestling of some sort. And they should have known this. And if they did know this and tried to skirt the rules for it, they only got off with a warning. They weren't, fined thousands of dollars for this either. So I'm just like, all right, we've all learned some things. Let's make some changes and go from there. Chris, your thoughts. I've ranted enough.
Yeah. Number of things here. So issue number one is the grouping of professional wrestling, which is stunt theater, with other combat sports. And I think, I don't have all of Oklahoma's laws in front of me. But I bet you their gambling laws are different for professional wrestling relative to other sports as well. That there probably is not betting on professional wrestling.
I think there's only gambling on Native American reservations.
Yeah, all right. So,
which is not privy to the OSAC rules, by the way.
That is fair, too. I wonder if maybe that would be a workaround for AEW in those states, too.
Yeah.
Like that, running these shows at a casino, I think, would actually probably, solve most of their problems. I guess you wouldn't have access to Oklahoma City, per se, but thinking there's a casino right outside of OKC. Not to get too sidetracked here, though. When we talk about the forms themselves, they need to update the forms. It really, the story here to me is clearly not understanding what professional wrestling actually is and treating it as though it's like real theater. However, I think the issue with sending a warning, or perhaps downplaying sending a warning, as someone who's just recently received a warning for trying to teach music lessons in the middle of the day, something that most people would not consider to be a major offense. Much like I think most people listening to the show would not see a Nyla Rose match as some sort of cause for offense. And I'm just basing that based on, the level of feedback we've gotten any other time Nyla Rose has ever wrestled ever in the history of this show, which is basically nothing other than you guys are kind of hard on Nyla Rose sometimes. So I don't think people are particularly worried that Nyla Rose is wrestling. So I would liken this level of offense to this. But when you give someone a warning, what you are saying is that the behavior is aberrant and should be ceased and desist. Rather than, if I saw the warning letter and it was like, this is a warning because currently this is the law, but there is also a rejoinder on there that said something like, we are in the process of updating our bureaucratic okay. codes.
No, you've moved me on the argument. I just want to let you know that before you finish your point.
Yeah, yeah. Such to, to be more harmonized with modern realizations of what professional wrestling is, just for starters.
Well, look, these rules were done when men were wrestling bears and other inanimate objects of some sort.
So that's the thing. It's like, I want to get to a place where Nyla Rose can wrestle anyone or anything she wants to wrestle. If she wants to do a leg drop on a steering wheel and people are willing to pay good money for that, Jeff. Yeah, right. You like capitalism. Don't tell me. Don't change your values right
get
now
paid.
On this show.
Get paid.
You paid. Get paid. Yeah, right.
If that steering wheel can cut a promo, I'm all welcome for it because this women's division needs it. Nevertheless, no. You're the rejoinder part. That works for me right there. I think if you're going to be scolded, you also need to be given the chance to either update your rules or have the offending party make amends. And what's missing from this is it's just the warning. And I would say the same to you about your HOA. If all they're doing is giving you the warning with no chance to rectify it or no chance to actually explain and maybe say, hey, maybe the rules are bad, if there's no appeals process, then yes, it's just.
Well, it's not even just the appeals process.
It's a threat.
It's not just, right. It, with absent that, right, it is a threat. And I mean, it still leaves the state of Oklahoma in this weird position where they're not acknowledging the fundamental difference between a mixed martial arts match between a man and a woman and a professional wrestling match between a man and a woman.
Okay, but I'll tell you what brought up about my opinion on this was that one of the people who were really railing against the bigotry of Oklahoma said, yeah, but sometimes I do have concerns where it's like Nyla versus Julia Hart and Nyla accidentally stiffs her with a punch.
Well, I mean, Vader used to stiff regular dudes with the
My counterpoint is,
I mean, the whole idea of Nyla Rose, right, is she's like a woman monster character.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, you know, and like, look, the power characters are going to sometimes stiff the small guys.
But my rejoinder to that was, well, you know who else is concerned about that? The Oklahoma State Athletic Commission. And, you know, I if you take it in bad faith, okay, sure. If you take it in good faith, you know, it's one of those things where there's a happy medium here. And
I would still say if Julia Hart's willing to get into a ring with Nyla Rose.
Yeah, right. As a wrestler, if you are willing to take the risk, that's fine, too. It's a weird MMA thing where I'm like,
I mean,
well,
in particular, who's Nyla up against? It's going to be someone she's wrestled before.
This was a local competitor or something.
Oh, okay. Oh, local competitor. I mean, yeah.
It was a squash match for ROH, pretty much.
I mean, you know, that's.
Yeah.
If the person's willing to get into the ring with them and it doesn't seem like there's any level of coercion in like a local talent job match,
that's a good point too.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I think it still becomes an overstep of government argument on that. Like, and also, like, I don't know, what does the board really know about that?
No, I agree. It's like having Cecil Peoples be a UFC judge when he came from boxing. He doesn't.
I mean,
know
you know, I'm like looking at this form real quickly, right?
Yeah, the form, by the way, is on the Oklahoma Department of Health board.
Who can actually make meaningful analysis of lungs, chest, heart, head, eyes, ears, nose, throat, abdomen, and orthopedic? Like that, you would need someone on the board.
Well, there's a doctor that does all that.
Who is effectively a doctor, yeah, but like really understands that in the context of, I mean, well, no, that's done by MD, right?
Yes.
And then that gets reviewed by the board. Who on the board can make heads or tails off of the MD review is what I'm saying.
I don't know if it's doctors on the board or if it's just bureaucrats who are like old carny promoters. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't know the depth of the makeup of the OSAC.
So also, did you notice question 8 on page 4?
No, what is it?
It is, have you ever or are you currently undergoing gender reassignment?
It's on, have they up? They might have already updated.
No. This is the same one you sent me earlier.
Where you can select
male or female
on page
3. But on page 4, it asks you the question if you're currently undergoing gender reassignment. And that makes this document a real boondoggle to understand.
Well, I'm going another way. I think they didn't fill out all the paperwork. I mean, they may have just paid, you know, the fee for the license or whatever, and said, we'll get you the paperwork later or whatever. I don't know. That's interesting.
The thing you sent me, page 3.
Huh.
There's two genders, male or female. Page 4, it's have you ever or are you currently undergoing gender reassignment? And it just really begs the question, how would that interplay with the document writ large then?
Yeah.
I mean, even disregarding page 3, right? I mean, I know people will be upset about page 3, but looking at the question 8 on page 4 here, I'm very confused, like, what the legal what would the board be able to do with that information? How would that be of utility to them? Do we now have like a multi-phase process of if you're in phase 1 of gender transition, it's still cool to wrestle the current gender?
Well, I think on the male-female one, I think that's just purely for medical reasons. If there's an emergency or something happens to the fighter, let's take wrestling out of this and make it a fighting type thing. If something happens to the fighter and they need medical help, they'll have that form and all the conditions and stuff on there and on file so that they can inform the hospital or medical facility if you're WWE. For the wrestling application, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm very, as you mentioned earlier too, that like Oklahoma's legislation is based on chromosomes. So XY being male,
Yes.
XX being female. Then what does gender reassignment?
It has to be for the explicit part of this law, then, I would guess.
I guess, but then but like the law basically says gender reassignment's irrelevant. It's all about your chromosomes. So then why even have it on the questionnaire?
I don't know, but that's a great point. Let's not get fixated on it
No,
necessarily, because
yeah, we can
I
move
don't have a
on. Yeah,
resolution.
no. I just found it fascinating as we were chatting about this.
In an interview, Nick Khan says that the big pay-per-views for World Wrestling Entertainment will remain stateside. I assume meaning the big four or five, depending on if you count Money in the Bank as one of them, but that the others are always open now to being held in foreign countries, and we've seen that now with Clash at the Castle and Backlash and other pay-per-views that are being set up. It looks like the B pay-per-views are going to be part of the world in World Wrestling Entertainment, and looks. I am actually looking forward to the next pay-per-view in the Tokyo Dome, my friend.
I think
Or Budokan.
I think all the new advancements into the worldness of WWE only bodes well for the company and the storytelling. I think it is going to allow over the next several years that they kind of stay on this course. And I tend to think that now we're in a post Vince Regnum and we are, moving into a new sort of model here.
I'll tell you what else is a new model before you finish your point.
Sure.
The pay-per-view model is gone, and streaming means you can have this at any time of the day, and then people in the States, which is the primary market for World Wrestling Entertainment, can then watch it.
Yep. And you can really start building your big Japanese stars. I remember 10 years ago when WWE was trying to do sort of its first presence in Japan. And they didn't, especially under Vince, didn't really have the discipline. Vince didn't really want to understand the market. Vince didn't
No.
really, he wasn't interested in that. This is a group now managing the company that I think is. And as you are rotating around the world here, I think that's awesome. I mean, bring a WWE show to Africa. That would be cool. Run a show like in Nairobi, something like that. One of the biggest.
Uganda, we can have those mud wrestling kids.
You are hearing great things about wrestling coming out of Uganda more and more this week. Honestly, the chatter's at an all-time high.
I sent Chris the clip of Maximum Male Models doing a run-in at that Federation, and I was just like, man, that's FU money right there. Going for a quick 30-second run-in on an internet wrestling company. But what you're saying about the first foray into Japan, I think you're talking about Beast from the East,
Yeah.
which was great. But it was really the post talk about that I remember was interesting
Great show.
because yes,
Yeah.
and Michael, one of Michael Cole's finest moments on commentary, as I recall. But the fan base were not the New Japan fan base. They were WWE fans, dressing in all the gear and dressing as their favorite characters, and they knew who Nakamura was, because Nakamura was coming back. I think Nakamura was there at that time,
Yeah,
right?
I think that was Nakamura, but the big match was Brock Lesnar versus
Finn.
Finn.
Yeah, because Prince. No, actually, I don't think Nakamura had signed with the company yet. I think that's what actually prompt may have gotten him there. The main event was Finn Balor, because he had just come over. He had been there as Prince Devitt for so long. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong on the. No, maybe did Jer No, Jericho fought Nakamura on that card, I think.
That's right.
I want to say that, but I'm not sure. But anyways, yeah, it's a good idea. You can give the foreign-born wrestlers a hometown pop. They're going to be doing one in Germany, even though it's not Austria. It's close enough for Gunther to have a big time match. You're going to have
Right, it's a great
possibly
play.
Drew at Clash of the Castle.
Built-in narrative climaxes for certain characters. So, like, Drew has some sort of narrative arc that culminates at Clash of the Castle. Gunther has a narrative arc that
Yes.
culminates in Germany.
Helps your
Shinsuke,
storytelling.
yeah, it helps your storytelling, keeps people in rotation with it creates a natural rotation.
This would have been really great with D'Lo Brown as a European or Eurocontinental champion, where he's taking out from various cities in Europe. I'm here for that. I'd be here for that again. Vince McMahon has registered to sell his remaining 8,021,405 shares in TKO. There are bad rumors to me that, oh, he may want to open another wrestling company to fight. I don't think that's the case. My most interesting one is that he is selling this to get all the money so that he can then spend all his kids' inheritance as the final F you to his kids for running him out of WWE. That is my theory going, but maybe it's just so he can pay off Janelle so not to go to court and then live the rest of his life in relative obscurity. Chris, what? Although there was a weird story where he went to Turks and Caicos on a private jet and came back with like 7 cats and a dog to give to his friends. It's the weirdest effing story I've ever heard. But Chris, your thoughts, sorry.
Whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty, Jeffrey? It's sad to see this man have to massively divest himself from a beautiful thing that he built because he's ran off because there are too many stories to count about him being a horrible person. That's my thoughts on this, Jeff.
Okay, we'll move on. Rocky Romero has been promoted to vice president in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He is now vice president in both AEW and New Japan.
Cool.
Okay. I find it a conflict of interest. That's what I find, but okay, great. Carlos Cabrera, this is coming up.
Look, right, I can't stop Tony Khan from making bad management decisions and allowing things that shouldn't happen to happen. And you were right in that first story that like part of this is walking into a boondoggle that was already there. You know, like if you walk into the bear trap is bad. Maybe it shouldn't be there, but like it's still your fault. And this is another situation where, you know, he should be more attentive. You shouldn't let a guy like Rocky Romero go and join New Japan Pro Wrestling. But I'm not Tony Khan. Tony Khan doesn't talk to me. We have not chatted. Not ever. I haven't reached out. But he hasn't reached out either. So this is on both of us.
We are so under his radar.
No, you know, honestly,
you more so than me.
It's on both of us.
I'm in his periphery due to other people that I used to do shows with. Carlos Cabrera announced early this evening as being signed by AEW to be part of their Spanish announce team. He, the longtime commentator for WWE broadcast with Hugo Savinovich. I believe he was also formerly CMLL, but don't quote me on that. But I believe that this is going to be part of a push. They are looking now at the Mexico market as a lot of their forbidden door type things and other relationships. I mean, they've signed a number of luchadors. New Japan is on solid footing. Any comment on this, or should I move on?
I mean,
mid smoke.
But no, you're gonna watch me do the speak out with the smoke here.
Okay.
So I think it makes some sense for AEW to focus on Mexico just because their money might go a little bit further when they're running in Mexico. They are running on a bit of a budget right now in terms of other international markets like Europe and that sort of thing. Europe, the euro, more expensive to do business over there. Mexico is more affordable. So I think there might be some sense in them doing it. That being said, I mean, how interested right now is America in Lucha Libre? I'm not getting this big, like, Lucha Libre vibe right now going on. I'm not seeing some mad buzz for Commander going on the streets. And I'm out there. I'm talking to the people. and I'm not hearing it. You know, they don't talk about it. They kind of like LA Knight a little bit, but you don't hear about this Commander.
Announced during the tapings on Wednesday, Ruby Riott pregnant. Congratulations to Angelo Parker. Where was I? Oh, here we are. New Japan Pro Wrestling Windy City Riott was Jack Perry's final New Japan match, and he's starting imminently in AEW. Did you happen to see any of the clips from the crowd or the heat or anything of that in Jack Perry's last match in Chicago?
I did not, no.
It was molten. They are playing very heavily into it. He's doing a lot of the punk, much like Kenta. And okay. Kenta was on the card too. He's teasing the go to sleep. know, that man, kind of
I'm super excited for him to have this big money match in WWE in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be great for Jack.
Gonna end on a bit of a light downer, but it's pertinent to the show. Tony Jones, former indie worker, passing away. Chris, does that name ring a bell with you?
Does not.
Tony Jones was the wrestler along with Mike Modest in Beyond the Mat, who went to the WWE taping to be enhancement talent, and that Jim Ross told you need to get some muscles in your upper chest here, that everybody took as telling Tony Jones to get on the gas.
I remember this.
The
scene,
tall, skinny black guy who was with Mike Modest when they went from UPW.
I kind of remember this. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Long time Bay Area indie wrestler as well. It's not big on your mind. So we'll just move on there. That is the end of the news segment. And now for the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched. I don't think I'm going to circle back to AWA. I've already been there, but it's going to be mostly modern stuff, I think, this week. Whatever we got a chance to do. Look, kids, there's wrestling now almost 6 days a week from both major companies. We try to get to all of it, but we don't promise anything. But we are going to start because there is a pay-per-view on this Sunday with AEW Dynasty. Sunday, coming out of the Chaffetz Arena in St. Louis, Missouri. Chris, I found this Dynamite baffling. And the numbers proved it, because I wrote to you at 7 o'clock my time after this AEW, and I said, why was this show sandwiched with Jon Moxley starting and ending when he's not even on this pay-per-view? And then for the overrun, which they only announced about 15 minutes before they decided, or before they did the overrun, was Joe and Swerve, which was, look, it was a good overrun, and I really dug that spot with Swerve, but the ratings came out, and at 7 o'clock, 60,000-something people clicked off the show, or my thought was DVRs were stopped because it didn't pick up the overrun because it wasn't originally planned on the schedule. And these overruns need to stop. You need to get your stuff in on the 2 hours. It's ridiculous because it's not helping your ratings, which was the whole ploy of both Raw and Nitro doing overruns, was you get the audience for the next show coming in, and then they'll be pissed about wrestling, but you'll still get the number. Here, it's everybody's turning off at 10 o'clock, probably turning it to Bravo for some crappy reality show or something like that, or thinking the show's over. It was just a ridiculous thing, but we'll get to the individual stuff as we get to the matches. But any thoughts on that before I get into
No,
it?
So I'll start on the overrun theory. I think you're basically correct that the whole zen of the overrun for both the show and the network is that you'll have so many people already watching your show that you'll pump an even bigger number going into the first 15 minutes of what would normally be that other time slot too. So the network wins, as does the wrestling show with a big final number at the end of their hour. But it doesn't work if the show is a drag. And this week I tapped out after the Orange Cassidy Shane Taylor match. I never made it as far as Claudio and Will Ospreay beyond the first handful of minutes, because I was so drained from the Chris Jericho and Hook and Taz stuff, and then also the Acclaim stuff in the back. That was a tap out. All right, we'll see you next week. We'll try this again next week. We're not doing this whole thing this week.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards. And yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Jericho, I have some thoughts on that one.
No, Hook and Jericho was the start of the problems, and that crescendoed into the acclaimed 70 seconds of doom.
Speaking of which, great time to talk about, because on the pre-show, aka Zero Hour, there are 12 matches so far announced. They'll probably announce like 6 more on Rampage and 3 on Collision, but who knows? But so far on Zero Hour, on the pre-show, we have 3 matches. The Acclaimed of Anthony Bones and Max Caster and Billy Gunn versus Bullet Club Gold, Jay White, and the Guns. Winner take all match for the AEW World Trios Championship and the very prestigious Ring of Honor World 6-Man Tag Team Championships. Chris, Max Caster pulled out Twink Blade, and he threw down his belt at the end of the promo. You had an issue with the other part of it, but I was just, this promo stunk, I thought. And go into it, please.
I mean, we had the Twink Blade stuff come up. And then didn't that crescendo into Bowens also talking about him being Twink Blade at the end of the promo?
Yes.
Yeah. Also weird. And then we have the Billy Gunn portion of the promo, which was also terrible, where he all of a sudden goes, "I'm going to go up against you, Colton, and the other one, and I have been beating you kids your whole lives." And then he just kind of kept going down that path of how much he's beaten these kids their whole lives. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, no shit, they hate you, Billy. You've been like beating them since they were children.
I have Rampage kind of on in the background, but I'm not really watching it. But there's a Jeff Hawkins special on there tonight. It's Yuka Sakazaki and Emi Sakura. And I am all about that match.
Nice.
Next one, Trent Beretta versus Matt Sydal. Trent Beretta, murder death, right?
Trent Beretta wins. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Murder death, because Sydal's a goober who got hit with a chair during that. Did you see that part where it's Cassidy versus Shane Taylor, and then Trent Beretta comes out and starts throwing chairs?
Oh, yeah. And so does like Chris Daniels tries to come down and make the save or whatever. Yeah. Right.
That's a pretty easy one. I think this is also a pretty easy one, even though the booking of this is insane to me. Orange Cassidy and Katsuyori Shibata versus Shane Taylor Promotions of Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty with Anthony Ogogo. 3 days after Lee Moriarty's biggest win of his career, they give the win right back to Shibata.
And Shibata and Orange Cassidy are going to win.
No, they're going to lose.
I think they're going to lose
because
Trent's going to cost them the match.
No, I'm going another way. I think this is going to be the start of an Orange Cassidy Anthony Ogogo feud about the punch. I think Anthony Ogogo is going to punch out one of these guys, and then it's going to be Orange Punch versus the Boxer.
Mm.
So I have Shane Taylor Promotions winning this.
Interesting. All right.
Okay.
Now
getting to the main show, a very interesting 6-man, given that we're defending both 6-man titles on the pre-show, and this is a far more interesting 6-man to me. Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe versus the House of Black in a trios match.
I think Adam Copeland's team wins because this is a feel-good match.
For a fact, because there's a lot of "that doesn't work for me, brother" in the House of Black, so I could see somebody like Kingston or Briscoe taking the loss here, but they've also been taking a majority of the beatings, so I don't know if we're going to be pushing this House of Black to higher heights again. I'm going to go with the baby faces here, just to do it. Hook versus Chris Jericho in an FTW rules match for the FTW championship.
Just an incredible go home promo for this match. I've never been more excited to see Hook and Chris Jericho than after this mediated segment with Taz. So let's begin by asking the question from a narrative standpoint, what was Taz's purpose in trying to create a brokered situation between Jericho and his son. At no point has he expressed any real interest in trying to find a peace here, and he didn't express on commentary what the point of him even being in the ring here was to mediate things between them. So that's issue number one.
You're trying to get past this by saying you've been my friend for 30 years, and I'm happy you brokered this deal for me.
But
it was lazy. It was lazy.
But what are we brokering? I mean,
the meeting between Hook and Jericho, because they
why
were
are
on,
they meeting?
Because they were on such bad terms.
But they were gonna have a match anyways at this pay per view.
I don't think so. I don't think that had been booked.
Okay, so technically that hadn't been booked, but correct. So essentially this thing's finally escalated in this segment, so such to the point where I'm supposed to arrive as viewer where
yes.
I wanted to see this match happen.
Yes.
Okay, so then let's talk about that part of the promo here. So mostly it's Jericho being condescending to Taz and Hook just standing there and watching his father get disrespected over and over and over and over again. And even if you have problems with your father, I get it. You would still not countenance watching someone else be disrespectful to your father like that, especially if they're in a condition where they can no longer fight for themselves. You would feel like...
He shoved him and Hook goes up there and he drops his chips and he does nothing except grab him. He doesn't throw blows, which would be my response, especially as a professional fighter, as Hook is. He just grabs him and says, "We're going to have a match."
Now you've gone too far, Jericho.
Yes.
Like, what? What?
He should have given him one body blow and Jericho should have taken the powder.
Yeah. Jericho should have went down, but then... Even worse, after this, there's just no real familial connection between Hook and Taz. Like, you don't feel the warmth there at all. They didn't, and that's due to the blocking. Like, they didn't set sort of interaction where Hook, like, looks after his dad more actively. It was very strange. And then Taz gets on commentary at the end of all of this and negates any of the tension that was built up here.
Yes.
And sort of is like, well, it's sort of writing off not liking Chris Jericho, where instead of that, this could have been a wonderful opportunity for Taz, a color commentator, to have a permanent fixed-in beef with Chris Jericho, whether he's babyface or heel. Just no matter what, Taz doesn't like Jericho ever since the shove.
Yeah, like Nigel and Danielson. It's I'm shoved by Jericho Jones over here. Moving on. I couldn't. And you know what this Jericho character is? It's a rib on CM Punk. Locker room leader CM Punk. I'm coming in because he did this once in WWE and it got eye rolls from, I think, Seth and Jericho and Undertaker, where he came in and he declared himself a locker room leader. And of course, in AEW and in WWE, he's using his old music, Cult of Personality. Lionheart is using his old music, et cetera, you know, the fake babyface type stuff, which a lot of think Punk is doing. He's still a condescending jerk, even though he's acting like a happy babyface. This is an absolute rib on CM Punk. So we're still gotten to about that, too.
Funniest part is it's also interwoven with Jericho feeling this need to defend his wrestling over the last several years here.
Yes.
He did that big parade of all these people he's wrestled who he's quote-unquote made better. Notably absent from the parade, Ricky Starks.
And Action Andretti. Yeah, boy, my instincts say that Chris Jericho gets this FTW championship and starts cutting Punk like promos. It just screams an ECW type of, maybe even ECW Punk in some ways, because this is a very retro character living in that kind of time period of either ECW telling it like it is or Punk in the WWE ECW type of thing. I just I think Hook should win this, but I just have this feeling that, hey, I'm the veteran here. I know what I'm doing. I'll get the kid over. I think Jericho wins this.
That's the hilarious part, is this is actually, once again, going to be more of the Jericho vortex of suck, where he makes whoever he's working with worse. And this time, he's actively referencing and building a character around him being a vortex of suck that is meant to be a parody of CM Punk, but is unfortunately too closely a parody of him, especially since he's the one playing him.
Cloud vampire, vortex of suck. Six of one, half of a dozen of another. Singles match for the AEW International Championship. My God, we had to add another belt into this whole thing in terms of the IWGP heavyweight title. Whatever. Sorry. Roderick Strong against Kyle O'Reilly. Roderick turned on Kyle at last week's Collision.
That was heartbreaking.
A match that we've seen in almost every company these two have been in.
Yeah, but you haven't seen it since Kyle O'Reilly started losing his hair.
Oh, yes. And growing it out at the same time. It's
a move.
It is a move. Who do you have here?
I think Kyle O'Reilly loses and ends up joining the Undisputed Era because they've broken his back.
If he was going to join, they wouldn't have turned on him just now. I think it is the Undisputed King. I think the Undisputed Kingdom come in for the beatdown or whatever for him. Now Kyle has to go find friends. Maybe it'll be Bobby Fish. I don't know.
Bobby Fish isn't problematic. That's fine. People love him.
80-year-olds love Bobby Fish.
A lot of people love Bobby Fish.
Wrestled Moses on the first WrestleMania. For the AEW TBS Championship, Julia Hart versus Willow Nightingale with Stokely Hathaway. Chris?
Willow wins?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're setting up Mercedes and her terrible promo again. Oh, my goodness. I love her, but it's getting hard for me, Chris. I can't make excuses for her anymore. She's a great wrestler. She's a terrible promo.
The promos, I mean, even sometimes the outfits coming out for the promos.
The outfits are so... I need to do what Becky Lynch was doing for a while as sketch comedian Becky Lynch. Let me find the most garish, weird outfit to wear out there so I can get attention.
It's the Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins
shop.
Too.
Yeah, the
yes.
Seth Rollins shop of wardrobing.
Yes.
It's quite terrible. These people need to stop dressing in Technicolor vomit.
I agree. Singles match for the AEW Continental Championship, not to be confused with the AEW International Championship. Kazuchika, don't call me Kazuchika Okada versus Pac, don't call me Pac. Gonna be a banger.
Yes, this actually will be.
This
match
is gonna
worth...
slap so hard. I am here for this. I think it might steal the show away from Ospreay and Danielson, to be honest with you. But
only
Okada.
Downside, yeah. It's the only downside is a foregone conclusion
match.
Yeah,
it's a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. Okada's got to win. If he doesn't win, it's malpractice. And that's the only thing working against this match. It's just got the foregone conclusion factor.
For some reason, we have turned the tournament final for the AEW World Tag Team Championship into a ladder match. The Young Bucks of Nicholas Jackson and Matthew Jackson. Interesting promo there. Versus FTR, Dax Harwood, and Cash Wheeler.
I feel like Matthew and Nicholas win this because we are slowly assembling the Okada people. The Okada faction is like a belt-holding faction. So a ladder match gives him a good opportunity to win the belts weaselly.
I think Jack Perry shows up and aligns with the Elite because they've been loving the scapegoat, because that's also his new gimmick, by the way. He has T-shirts that call him the scapegoat. I think he possibly does a boss man where he lifts the belts as they're trying to get him off the ladder, or he moves the ladder in some way. And hey, it's no DQ. So I think the Jacksons, Perry, and Okada are your new Elite.
Yeah.
But I think we both agree on that. Timeless Toni Storm with Mariah May and Luther versus Thunder Rosa in a singles match for the WWE Women's World AEW Women's World Championship. Chris, if I'm ever getting beat down 2-on-1 and you come to save me, I will not shove you after you save me. I could not
Deonna
believe
Purrazzo
that.
And Thunder Rosa segment was so dumb.
Thunder Rosa has been pretty good. She got a promo on Friday or Saturday that was lights out. Unfortunately, it was on shows that barely people watch, and they didn't re-show it on Dynamite, but it was a fantastic promo by her to the point where I want to belt her, because Timeless Toni Storm doesn't need the belt. The Mariah May thing is not the end game here, obviously, because now we've started that love triangle with the girl from Club Venus and Stardom. I don't know. I'd really like Thunder Rosa to win this, but this just feels like they're going to keep doing Toni Storm comedy.
I think we are very much on the Toni Storm, it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality right now.
In a match for determining who the best in the world is from either before or now, and no promos have been cut about this, and nobody's bitter about it. It's just two guys going, I'm the best. Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson. It'll be good. Don't get me wrong. I'm just... all this storytelling they've been doing with the Callis family has made no sense. Danielson and Ospreay haven't cutting promos on each other to hype this as a fight. This is a dream match for message board types who just want to see a good, smooth match. And I get that, but man, I needed some more heat going into this.
Yeah, I think the build for this main event has absolutely been atrocious.
It's not the main event. It's not the main event. By the way,
well, the main event is Swerve and Samoa
yes,
Joe.
Yes.
Okay, so but that
it's the best in the world, but not for the belt. That's ridiculous.
It's still your sub main event, right? It's still your sub main event.
Yes.
So we now have to grade the build to this on the premise that this is a sub main event level match, and having the Don Callis family drama overshadow anything involving Bryan Danielson, and having Don Callis be a character who's apparently not on either one of their two sides, I think.
And not being a manager. It's just the most ridiculous.
And not
thing.
Being a manager, I think it has done nothing to help build this match. And while I'm not uninterested in seeing a Danielson versus Ospreay match, I want to see one with a good build for some degree of stakes. And no, I don't believe who is, quote, the best wrestler in the world, unquote, matters. Because, one, as you mentioned, there's no belt on the line. That's the whole point of what the big gold championship singles title is supposed to be about. The whole premise is this goes to the best wrestler in the company. And I would argue that even when wrestlers talk about how they're carrying the company and they're good for business, that actually misses the point of what the big old belt's supposed to
you
be
know
about.
What this match is really in reality, if you want to consider it that, it's the Dolph Ziggler steal the show.
Right.
Championship.
Work rate match. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm the work rate guy.
Yeah. That doesn't move me as a feud type thing, because neither guy's talking about the other guy's work rate. And how I'm a better worker than you, and I'm going to do this to you. Which look, all I want is a little bit more of second step thing if you're deconstructing this match. This match is about two guys who are great technical wrestlers who are going to see if Danielson still has it from the decade before, or Will Ospreay is the now. But Bryan Danielson has lost all these matches. Will Ospreay should be bringing that up in a promo. Oh, you say you're still one of the best in the world, but you lost to Eddie Kingston. You lost to MJF. You lost to this guy, this guy, and this guy. I haven't lost to anybody. I am still undefeated in AEW. I'm going to prove it to you Sunday night at, just give me that.
That would have been a good go-ho promo. You need to prove to me that you're worthy to be in the conversation of best in the world still, Danielson.
And then we go back to the Danielson, because remember, we were thinking when he went out against MJF, he was going to be full of self-doubt or whatever. We need to see the Blackpool Combat Club punishing Bryan Danielson for losing. They punished Wheeler Yuta in the gym. And you remember that one promo when Regal was still with the company? They have Yuta in there, and they're just beating the snot out of him for losing matches. Why is Bryan Danielson not prone to the same kind of punishment that Wheeler Yuta was? It's one of those things where it's like, use the lore that you have established here. You know, he is the member of Cobra Kai who is failing.
Yeah, like that they have, like, they have the accountability circle, you know what I mean? They call it, so they have some sort of euphemism for it, and the accountability circle just means that all the other four guys kick your ass, and he should be subject to that as part of training. And like, for the losing leading, like, they're still training him, but they kick his ass and they make him go and run, and they make him do a box and stuff too,
so they're toughening him up for this biggest match of his career. Dude, we just did 3 minutes more work than they did in 4 or 5 weeks. It's ridiculous.
This is for a sub-main event that you're asking people to pay how much for this pay-per-view?
But see, the advertising on this, a lot of it has been revolved around Ospreay and Danielson. So it's a de facto main event, but it's not a main event because they decided we're going to put the title match on last.
But you know, if you're looking at, like, this is building blocks or whatever, this is one of the major building blocks of this show, and I think it's been a dereliction of storytelling leading into this to be focused in on the intrigue of when will Don Callis stab Will Ospreay in the back?
Yes. And then Will Ospreay will have to get his revenge by beating each of his team members again. And it was the most ridiculous thing. And I don't think they're going to do the turning thing here. I think they're going to wait till Double or Nothing. And my co-host on the Dynamite Show thinks that it's going to be anarchy in the arena between the Don Callis family with Will Ospreay still in tow versus the Blackpool Combat Club and maybe an Eddie Kingston or something like that. So, yeah, it's just weird. But anyways, we'll go on to the main event. Samoa Joe versus Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana for the world title. I really like Swerve Strickland. I have not liked this incarnation of Swerve Strickland when they basically went hard into the babyface against Joe. Number one, we need to set some rules for Joe. When Joe is not wrestling, he must be in a suit at all times with that title. I don't want to see him in gear and jeans on the go home. I want to see him in the suit. I want him to talk about the lifestyle he's living with that big gold belt, because that was the first promo that really got us hooked on this AEW Joe character. Swerve, and we've talked about this before on the show, but he's threading that line of wanting to be the cool bad guy, getting the cheers of Whose House, Swerve's House, being the babyface shine, but also then going back to his heel past where he's saying, you know, I hit somebody with a chain. Whereas the build to have made was Joe's the biggest badass in the yard. Swerve is also a very bad dog who beat up Nick Wayne in his family's house and made Hangman bleed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think they're going to belt Swerve Strickland. I would love Joe to continue holding this and to have Hangman come in and screw Swerve Strickland, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to go in with Swerve, and I think he's going to get the title run through August. And I think it's just going to depend on the follow-up whether or not we also consider that a failed title run. Because I think in August, I think Will Ospreay is going to be built to get the big win at All In Wembley. Now, I could see them holding off and making Joe do it because they don't want to beat Swerve. You can talk me into that, Chris, if you'd like. But I think the plan here is Swerve gets the title, and then he loses it at All In at Wembley in England.
I think Swerve loses here.
I'm here for this. State your case, please. I'm interested.
I think the Hangman Swerve thing is not done. Okay. And that right now the big money in the storytelling, you know, I guess if Swerve had the belt, then you'd have Hangman and Swerve had be the first feud. And Hangman is just obsessed with Swerve because he's got the belt now. I guess that there's some intrigue in that. But I very much share your exasperation with this Swerve Strickland character. You know what he has, as you were saying, everything and running down all the characteristics? It's NWO 1996 energy.
Yes.
Where they're the cool guys, but they're the bad guys. And the good guys are squares against them. And then even worse, I mean, almost maybe more evolving into 97, especially leading into Wolfpack, where they were heels, but they were also baby faces as well. And so, like, the NWO became so confusing that they had to bifurcate it into red and white to reestablish who were the baby faces and who were the heels in the NWO. I don't care for this iteration of Swerve. We talked about the contract signing at length a couple of weeks ago, and I still have such a bad taste in my mouth from Joe cowering. Swerve getting cheers for trying to use the chain, and the chain usage backfires on him. And people feel bad for him because he was unable to get one up on the champion by using a weapon. And then, like, yeah, Joe's like out of control of his temper for some reason, just because Swerve signs in his own blood. I'm not ready nor particularly interested in seeing this Swerve character be a champion right now. So I'm rooting against it. But I also just think that if the goal here is to make Ospreay the big money acquisition, your champion eventually, and we're doing the Danielson match to build up Ospreay, just looking ahead in the calendar, I think Joe losing to Ospreay makes a lot more sense in Wembley. And I think that Joe can deliver the big match that Ospreay needs to get over in Wembley better than Swerve.
He can deliver that promo where I'm going to beat you in your home country. Much better than Swerve, I think.
Yeah. Oh, God. Right, because then what do you do? Do you turn Swerve heel again once he becomes champion in advance of him going into Wembley? I think it makes more sense to keep Joe cruising on this heel path and make him even more heelish as he becomes, you know, as he faces up against Ospreay.
All right, I think that's going to do it for AEW. Let's go over to WWE/NXT land. I have one note for the main roster stuff. That Sammy Chad Gable thing was a great piece of business. The match was great. Match was the turn, the way they shot, not only the way they shot the turn where he's with his wife and then you see Chad come in the background and get him because they have the tight shot on Sammy with there. They obviously have some film school geeks now in production. Like the entire tracking shot going after the Jey Uso thing going up the stairs through the concession stand to the outside to Sammy looking up at the arena. It was creative, but it's very, very close to teetering on fart smelling in terms of, you know, even Orson Welles is saying it's a bit much of a tracking shot. And I did that on the third man. Let's hold up on that. But the match itself was absolutely sublime. And I think our friend Alex Pawlowski over at Fightful, my old friend over there, is getting what he wants. I think we're getting Team Angle 2.0 with Gable and the Creeds. I don't know where that leaves Otis or Tozawa or Maxine, but I get the feeling comedy goof as babyface. But I'd love to see Otis reimagined, even though
Otis as the fourth man in that faction as the heavy. Where you have the Creeds as like, yeah, and then Gable is the
no
leader.
More worm or caterpillar or anything like that from just
power
bash.
Moves.
Yes.
Just big power moves. I am so here for trios matches with Brutus and Julius and Otis. Otis, even the name makes sense in there. You have Otis, Julius, Brutus.
But everything screams Tozawa and Otis get fed to the Creeds.
Yeah.
I
think that's possible. That's very possible for sure.
Because Otis is a lovable Chris Farley fat guy again.
Yeah. And they like this Maxine and Otis story for cuz reasons.
Maxine is so terrible. I'm sorry. She should not be on primetime. I don't care if she's learning and that's the story. Anyways, your turn, sir.
No, I just wanted to echo your sentiments on the final segment of Raw here. I thought that it was just a wonderful piece of business. Chad Gable's awesome.
Yes.
And he's finally being recognized and utilized in a really great
finally
way.
Finally out from under the thumb of Shorty G. And
oh, yeah.
Shush. Even though, look, WWE wrestlers get this thing where it's like, well, it got me over with the crowd, and it sold me a lot of merch, so it made me a lot of money. So they tell you that they like it. See William Regal dressing in drag. But you gotta think that a guy like Gable, who is
he
an
can
Olympian,
do thank you,
is just itching to show you I can go out there and do bangers and suplex guys and be a short killer. Whereas Shorty G, the rapping Gucci that he was, I just can't believe that's how Vince saw him. But anyways, it's your turn.
Okay, so I want to swing it over to NXT to the very interesting Tony D'Angelo segment this week involving the No Quarter Catch crew. They kill the man. The D'Angelo family whacked. They whacked Drew Gulak. He got memory hold completely. They whacked him from the Titantron.
But let me push back on that. Did he get memory hold bringing him up?
Alluding
to him on television and not just going about your day. I think that also might look, it's a very small percentage chance because I doubt that Drew Gulak doesn't know how to do a handshake. But on the other hand, it also opens a door for, well, they didn't really kill me. They went back on the order and having Gulak return from the quote unquote dead.
He's done. You had to listen to what the No Quarter Catch crew said here. They went one step further and they talked about doing a service to professional wrestling by getting rid of Drew Gulak. Okay, no,
that's actually a very good point.
Their whole appeal to the D'Angelos for why they shouldn't have to pay money is that the D'Angelos were doing a public good. So this was at once a deeper heel turn, I would argue, for the D'Angelo family, who don't care, as Tony said, he didn't care about doing good or whatever.
No specifics, by the way. I forgot about that, too.
Yeah, the no specifics. And then you have the No Quarter Catch crew, I guess, turning kind of babyface-ish, at least the way I saw this, even though they didn't, quote-unquote, have the money. Essentially, what they did is they snookered the D'Angelos into killing. Whacking.
That makes them the heels, though, I think.
But they're not, though, because the whole reason they're doing it is because Drew Gulak was bad.
I think they care about
the purity of the sport.
Well, the bad guy's with a point, though. I think it's more or less, you know, they're doing it for the honor, but they also snookered the good guy, the good mafia, the baby face mafia. I don't know.
Thou shalt not whack.
Yes, that's in the Bible.
That's in the Bible. They talk about that.
I am going to stay on NXT because I only have two quick hits, really, because I didn't watch a lot of it. I was dozing off at the same time. But it was brought up to me, NXT has six different feuds involving six different pairs of women in a feud. Now, they may not be the best feuds in the world. I will defend Ariana Grace's flakiness to the end of time because I like her. And Thea Hale is an absolute weirdo, and she's great at it. They might not be great feuds, but you have to give them credit for getting six different pairs of women in various feuds with different storylines. If you consider Tatum Paxley not a recycled brand of everything else they do with every single heel in WWE.
I'll go with this. I don't have necessarily any faith that they're going to commit to the Paxley character, but the one thing they sort of did is she's now just obsessed with the title and whoever holds it. Which I think is potentially interesting characterization. I have my doubts that they're going to keep with that. I also want to give a big shout out to the Ilya Dragunov and Javon Evans match. That was Dragunov got the exact perfect level of showcase match in there for Javon Evans, where Javon Evans was completely outclassed but got to do some very cool moves along the way and have a couple of moments where he rocked Dragunov, but he was never in any real chance of winning that match. Yeah. That was the exact right sort of showcase match for Javon Evans there.
Yes, but it sure enough happened on week two. That's where I'm mad at, because I was mad at this, Chris. And I'm like, I get that what modern wrestling is what it is, and oh, he had such a great reaction in week one. You're putting him in a world title match on week two that he debuted, as opposed to giving him maybe a bit of a win streak. And
it wasn't a world title match. It wasn't for the title.
It was an open challenge.
It was an open. But it was just Dragunov was willing to fight whoever. Essentially, okay. Yeah. It was never actually said as my title was up for grabs.
Then allow me to reword it. You put your hot rookie coming off a hot debut against your world champion, even if it's not for the title, the guy who's the class of your division. No. You build up that guy. You give him more big wins, and you know, 5 or 6 weeks down the road, then he can fight Dragunov and lose, and have a great showing doing that.
Have you ever heard of a little man named John Cena? He had a match against The Undertaker, and he got his respect.
I hate you so much right now. I just don't bring that crap up. This is NXT. They're supposed to do better than the main roster in this training area. They're supposed to teach them the building blocks of professional wrestling. And the building blocks.
A lot of people like John Cena.
Let's debut Goldberg, and I'm not saying Javon Evans is Goldberg in any way, but let's debut him with a giant spear and a 12-second win. Then let's put him up against Ric Flair week two. What? No. You protect him. You give him an aura of mystery. You allow him to continue doing these things. You get him white hot, and then he does the spectacular, I'm leaping over everybody for the open challenge type thing. We go, oh, we never expected this right now type of a thing. Now, we didn't expect it right now because nobody would ever thought you'd be dumb enough to beat a hot star on week two. That's me. I get it.
I was more fascinated by what happened to the man pile that was suddenly outside by the ring and then just vanished. It was captivating. There were so many humans out there, and then they were just gone.
Oh, God. Your turn, Chris. I don't have anything else.
I'm trying to think what else is worth mentioning on here. Ridge Holland is a thing that continues to happen. And... at least Lola Vice won a match this week on NXT, which is good.
Building to another match with Natty.
Right, which is bad.
Which is, well, I like Natty. I think we've now done... this is actually...
I mean, I actually think, like, Lola will probably end up beating Natty.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's 50-50 booking to me. Whatever. Did you like the cage match?
Did I like the cage match? I thought the cage match did its job, but I can't say it's it, because I'm done with the Carmelo and Trick don't have anything more to do with this story at this point. So this felt like a very silly second piece of punctuation on a sentence that's already over.
Yeah, this is very weird to me because the rumor is it came out on Fightful Select today is that officials in WWE are not going to be bringing up Trick Williams for the draft. Spoiler. That also might be leaked fake news. I don't know for a fact. But I guess they're going to try a big, powerful title run with Trick, and maybe he beats Ilya and sends Ilya on his way. Or they do it. They might do a tournament. They might have Ilya just vacate.
No, I don't. Maybe they have Ilya vacate.
Battle Royal for the title, and we'll have more man piles for you, Chris.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, especially if they vanish. That's always an exciting effect. I've been watching a lot of magic stuff recently, so like that would be very cool to see done, the disappearing pile of man. Now, when it comes to Trick Williams as champion, I don't think he beats Ilya next week. I still think he loses. Like,
I think he gets screwed, so he has to leave.
Right.
But then he has to find a way back somehow to NXT.
He finds his
Because to me, I was thinking, okay, you retire or you get him out of NXT, and that means he shows up at the draft being drafted right after Carmelo. You know, like if SmackDown has two picks in a row, it's like, oh, we're gonna pick Carmelo Hayes from NXT, yay! And then we're gonna pick Trick Williams as well. Oh crap! And then it's on. You know, but it's
you can come back under a mask as Willie Trickster.
What would Trick Williams? The Masked Trickster. That's actually probably what
it
would be.
No, I said Willie Trickster. Willie Trickster. It's a great name.
Cutting Mr. Wrestling 2 style promos. I'm here
absolutely.
For
absolutely. Yeah, he has. He says he's here to save frivolity in the NXT, and that he wants the belt.
I want to see who the best is.
I want to see who the best is.
Yeah. Okay. I want to face.
Other than that, you know, like, look. Ivar is being built for a match with Obafemi.
Okay, that was baffling. Why did we beat him on Raw?
That's what I was wondering too. And then,
because he had that great match with Ricochet. He's hot, and they announce him. He comes out for this match on Raw. They beat him, and then it's like, I am here to challenge Obafemi. It's like,
And then they got thrown in his face, and he has to essentially have a rebuild against Josh Briggs, and that's fine. And they had a nice little small match. But I don't think he's going to beat Obafemi. So then, like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, it's just, well, he looked good. And he can make Obafemi look good. And he's a big guy who knows how to work. It's like, yeah, I get that. Then
he can make Obafemi look good, for sure.
Then don't beat him on the main roster. Have him have a 2-win winning streak coming into NXT and then beat him.
Ivar looks incredible on the NXT stage too, where it's like a little bit more condensed and smaller, like we were talking about last week. Like those big moves that he does, they're awesome. He's great. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I'm good.
This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at Crap Game 13 on Elon Musk's great app X. You can also follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. On X. Chris is only on the Instagram. He is at @DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. All sorts of podcasts. Oh, and by the way, if you like the show, I should have plugged this at the top. Go to our link on Red Circle and click donate. We're not making any money on ads. We're doing this free. Give us some beer money, or Chris, some other stuff money.
Please.
Some HOA fine money.
No shit.
I also do a show over on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show. About 20 minutes after it goes off the air, we go live on YouTube, drops into your podcatchers the next morning. Myself and Paul Fontaine thoroughly, sometimes to an annoying point, deconstruct that night's AEW Dynamite. A lot of people think that I'm a little bit too contrarian on there. I don't care. It's a good show. Chris has other interests and whatnot, including drumming that annoys his neighbors. He's going to tell you about it now.
Yeah, I liked playing music at one point in my life, which was as recently as just a month ago. Now I am still teaching guitar lessons and music lessons if you are so moved and so interested in learning those. And I am playing Legend of Zelda games if you want to talk to me about those. And watching
Twitch stream watching you play Zelda.
Yeah, that, and like I can talk about the Penn and Teller Fool Us episodes that I've been watching recently. There's a lot of good magicians out there. I like them.
David Copperfield, that's it.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.